KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. I'm Mike Conant, your host, and on the engineering board is Edmiro Willis. Mike Padre, who has his own show on Thursdays at 3 p.m., Politics Done Right. Here we do politics all over the place. Last week, we did what I thought was an interesting show, and I think it got some interesting responses about what was the South fighting for when the Confederate States, the Confederate States to be, seceded from the Union. And as part of that show, I read what has come to be called the Cornerstone Speech, which was given extemporaneously, 5,000-word extemporaneous speech, impressive, by the Confederate Vice President Alexander Stephens in Savannah, Georgia, March 21st, 1861. And let's see, there is essentially one sentence that I can use to kind of bring that back. This is what he says, allow me to allude to one other aspect of the new Constitution. It has put at rest forever all the agitating questions relating to our peculiar institution. African slavery as it exists amongst us is the proper status of the Negro in our form of civilization. I mean, essentially, that's it. Everything else is fill-in and expansion on the topic. So for people that say that slavery was not the central point of the Confederate secession, they're just mistaken. They're trying to feel better about Southern history. I want to approach this from a little different direction today. And I'm going to start off with something that may not seem related, but I think it's very much related. I'm going to start with the premise that every once in a while in history, it's like a moment in history gets kind of silly putty-like, really mushy and flexible, and you can do all kinds of things with it. A lot of history is rigid, but you know, Doctor Who talks about fixed points in time, and occasionally you get to a place in time where almost anything seems possible if you just knew magically the right things to do and the right responses to get. I think one of those moments was in 1991, after the collapse of the Soviet Union. You had Bill Clinton in office. You still had a Democratic Congress. And I think that the thinking, this is my sense, I haven't had time to deeply research it, but having lived through the period, I had a sense at the time that the notion in our government was to try not to disrespect the Russians, to respect the fact that they had lost an empire, that they were humiliated by that, that on one hand they felt they deserved to be a great power. They're still the single largest country in the world based on landmass. And they wanted to be respected for, if not the power they had, the potential they had, and the fact that they were still a great nation. They were a huge nation with like 190 million people in the Russian Federation. And I think that the way the relationship started with Boris Yeltsin as president, I think it started with that kind of approach in mind. And when the Republicans came into Congress under Newt Gingrich, elected in 94, came into power in 95, it was my impression that the kind of approach that Congress wanted the president to take, and of course they had power to push this agenda, they essentially wanted to defeat Russia or treat Russia as a defeated nation. And I think that over a number of years, you know, when Russia was down, their currency was practically worthless. Their whole economy was in a shambles. Their governmental structure was in a shambles. Their president, while possibly a nice guy, was a drunk. And they were going through some tough times, really tough times. And I have always felt that if we had been more generous, if the West, not just the United States, if the West had been more generous with a helping hand, I think that our relationship with Russia today would be somewhat different. I think that there would be less of an adversarial relationship. I think that they would not feel like their pride had been stepped on. I'm not bringing this up to talk specifically about our treatment of the Russian Federation in the mid-19 and late 1990s. But I do think that the point is that there was a moment in time when many different things were possible, when a historical change in relationships could be accomplished, because everything had changed so dramatically that there weren't a lot of fixed points that had to be defended on each side. I want to bring that now to the post-Civil War period in the United States, which I have to say, I think, in honesty, we still are experiencing. You know, they talked about the post-World War II period, and most historians, I think, consider that ended around 1991 with the collapse of the Soviet Union. But I think that we are still, in this country, going through a post-Civil War period. If you look at the relationships between North and South, between rural and urban, and I think that the shooting, the tragedy at the Mother Emanuel AME Church in Charleston, because of the great emotional generosity of the families of the victims, as I think a trigger, I think a lot of people felt kind of guilty. A lot of people that normally wouldn't felt kind of guilty and exposed morally, politically, whatever, so that this movement to take down Confederate flags, battle flags, national flags, naval flags, all these different Confederate flags from state grounds and a lot of other places. Mississippi is even beyond belief considering taking the battle flag out of their flag. That's the moment of time we're in. I see this as comparable to that moment of time after the collapse of the Soviet Union in 1991, when if we had given them the same kind of generosity that we gave to our allies in Western Europe in terms of the Marshall Plan. I'm not talking about a Russian Marshall Plan necessarily, but that kind of generosity of spirit, turning enemies into friends, helping friends recover. I think that we might be in a different place today if that had happened after the Civil War. But again, I think we're still in a post-Civil War period. One of the things I'd like to do is read Abraham Lincoln's second inaugural speech. It's not long. It's really no longer than what I read last week, maybe a bit shorter at that. Lincoln tended to be very frugal with his words. I got this particular copy off of Wikipedia, which is often a very good, easy source. And in their sort of prologue description of the speech, they point out that Lincoln, in his speech, did not speak of happiness but of sadness, that some see this speech as a defense of his pragmatic approach to Reconstruction, in which he sought to avoid harsh treatment of the defeated South by reminding his listeners of how wrong both sides had been in imagining what lay before them when the war began 4 years earlier, and that Lincoln balanced that rejection of triumphalism with the recognition of the unmistakable evil of slavery. When I was in school in New York, and I imagine the textbooks are different in other states, but there was mention of a group called the Radical Republicans in Congress after the Civil War, the Republicans that really wanted to punish the South. Now, keep in mind that the Republican Party, for the most part at that time, was an abolitionist party. And the Democrats were the racists, you know, calling a spade a spade. Maybe I shouldn't use that phrase. And the South, which was already humiliated, defeated, economically broken, people starving. I mean, it looked a lot like Europe after the Second World War in terms of what the people were dealing with. And it looked a lot like Germany after the Second World War in terms of the fact that they were framed as having been traitors, defending an evil institution, rebelling against the legal authority of the United States, which does, after all, have in its constitution legal means for changing the government without going through a war of secession. And there was a sense in the North to punish the South. You know, people think of 150 years as being a really long time. It's six generations. It's only two lifetimes. So it's entirely possible that a man or a person who experienced the Civil War, who knew their grandchild, you could have literally somebody alive today who had a grandparent that they knew in childhood who remembered that war. When you look at it that way, we're not that far away emotionally, intellectually, for many people, we're not that far away from that war. 150 years, it's a long time. I think we need to think, all of us, Northerners, Southerners, liberals, conservatives, rebels, non-rebels, I think all of us need to think really, really hard about how we want to use this moment in time in our country, in what I think is still the post-Civil War period, how we want to use this opportunity where emotions and policies and intellectual sets are suddenly in flux. Suddenly people that didn't think they had anything to consider are reconsidering and looking at things different. I'm going to read the speech. I'm going to point out that this will be more or less an open forum. I would like you, because we don't have a guest, that's usually my policy, but I would like you to try to keep the discussion somewhere related to what we're talking about, somewhere related to forgiveness. I think there's a lot of forgiveness to go around in this country in our post-Civil War period. I think that Northerners, and liberals particularly, have to be prepared to forgive the South for whatever real or perceived injustices they forged upon the Union. I think that the South needs to accept what its history is, but I think that they also need to be willing to forgive the North for the things that they feel the North did in terms of the destruction, the killing, the march through Atlanta where they burned the city down. Sherman's march to the sea was not a walk in the park. There's a lot of forgiving to do on both sides. You see, Egberto's shaking his head no, and that's the problem. That's part of the problem, because all of us are going to have to swallow some part of our resentment, whether it's Northern resentment against the South and their institutions, whether it's Southern resentment against the North and the way the war was conducted and the destruction that was wrought on them. All of us need to take a step back and maybe swallow some things if we are going to be reunited as a country. I'm going to do a quick ID. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM. My engineer is Egberto Willis, who's probably a little annoyed at me right now. Yeah, he is. He has his own show, 3 o'clock on Thursdays, called Politics Done Right. Apparently, my politics today, not so much. I want to read, though, the inaugural speech that Lincoln read in 1865. What's important about this is that I think that what I am saying is very much what Lincoln was saying contemporaneous to his time. And because he tends to be very spare with his words, I'm going to read the whole thing. It's probably 500 words or less. Fellow countrymen, I'm not even going to try to do a Lincoln accent. I'm not Daniel Day-Lewis. At this second appearing to take the oath of the presidential office, there is less occasion for an extended address than there was at the first. Then a statement somewhat in detail of a course to be pursued seemed fitting and proper. Now, at the expiration of 4 years during which public declarations have been constantly called forth on every point and phase of the great contest which still absorbs the attention and engrosses the energies of the nation, little that is new could be presented. The progress of our arms, upon which all else chiefly depends, is a is as well known to the public as to myself, and it is, I trust, reasonably satisfactory and encouraging to all. With high hope for the future, no prediction in regard to it is ventured. On the occasion corresponding to this 4 years ago, all thoughts were anxiously directed to an impending civil war. All dreaded it, all sought to avert it. While the inaugural address was being delivered from this place, devoted altogether to saving the Union without war, insurgent agents were in the city seeking to destroy it without war, seeking to dissolve the Union and divide effects by negotiation. Both parties deprecated war, but one of them would make war rather than let the nation survive, and the other would accept war rather than let it perish. And the war came. 1/8 of the whole population were colored slaves, not distributed generally over the Union, but localized in the southern part of it. These slaves constituted a peculiar and powerful interest. All knew that this interest was somehow the cause of the war. To strengthen, perpetuate, and extend this interest was the object for which the insurgents would rend the Union even by war, while the government claimed no right to do more than to restrict the territorial enlargement of it. Neither party expected for the war the magnitude or the duration which it has already attained. Neither anticipated that the cause of the conflict might cease with or even before the conflict itself should cease. Each looked for an easier triumph and a result less fundamental and astounding. Both read the same Bible and pray to the same God, and each invokes his aid against the other. It may seem strange that any men should dare to ask a just God's assistance in wringing their bread from the sweat of other men's faces. But let us judge not, that we be not judged. The prayers of both could not be answered. That of neither has been answered fully. The Almighty has his own purposes. Woe unto the world because of offenses, for it must needs be that offenses come, but woe to that man by whom the offense cometh, he quotes. If we shall suppose that American slavery is one of those offenses which, in the providence of God, must needs come, but which, having continued through his appointed time, he now wills to remove, and that he gives to both North and South this terrible war as the woe due to those by whom the offense came, shall we discern therein any departure from those divine attributes which the believers in a living God always ascribe to him? Fondly do we hope, fervently do we pray, that this mighty scourge of war may speedily pass away. Yet, if God wills that it continue until all the wealth piled by the bondsman's 250 years of unrequited toil shall be sunk, and until every drop of blood drawn with the lash shall be paid by another drawn with the sword, as was said 3,000 years ago, so still it must be said, the judgments of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. With malice toward none, with charity for all, with firmness in the right as God gives us to see the right, let us strive on to finish the work we are in, to bind up the nation's wounds, to care for him who shall have borne the battle, and for his widow and his orphan, to do all which may achieve and cherish a just and lasting peace among themselves and with all nations. That was Lincoln's second inaugural. We don't know what history would have looked like if Lincoln had lived, if he had fought the harsh Reconstruction practices that the Union Congress applied to the defeated South. We don't know if the resentments that have festered for all these generations would still have been as they are. But I think Lincoln made clear in his speech that whatever bitterness people harbored on both sides of the war needed to somehow, at some point, be set aside for the greater good of binding up the wounds of the country. 150 years later, we still have not done that. We still, in a sense, have not done Lincoln's work. None of us. Not the North, not the South. So we have hate. And we have killings and lynchings and church burnings and white supremacist terrorism. So, at this point, I will invite phone calls. 713-526-5738, 713-526-KPFT. And I would look forward to hearing your thoughts, for or against, or indeterminate as they may be. That's what discussion is for. Discussion is for, well, if then, well, I think but. That's what discussion is about. 713-526-5738. Okay, so Egberto now is trying to conjure phone calls for me. Egberto, so you've listened to me go on this for 20 minutes. I know that initially you were shaking your head, you were rolling your eyes. Any new thoughts based on what I've read or said so far?
I am all for forgiveness. I am all for all of that. However, I think the one premise that I don't agree with is that, it almost came across to me, the way you spoke, as if we were talking about, what's that word? We've got a call, so let me take that first.
Okay. All right. I guess what I've been saying, and we'll have a caller in a moment, but I think what I've been saying isn't forgive and forget. I don't believe in forgive and forget. I'm big on forgive. I've had wrongs done me. You know, there are only 8 people in my life. I have not shared this. There are only 8 people in my life that I can say I have hated. 8. That's all. I use that word very sparingly and very deliberately. And I think that we have to be prepared, if not to forget, which I think makes us suckers, but I think we have to forgive. We lost our phone calls? Oh, Greg, call back. And Doug, I saw you on there and you disappeared. No, Doug, no. All right, Greg, call back. There's a lot of bitterness, and you might disagree with why some people feel their bitterness, and they may disagree with why you feel your bitterness. There's a lot of bitterness on both sides. If Jews can buy BMWs and Mercedes cars after the Second World War, I think that African Americans, while I'm not asking them to forget the wrongs done them, I think African Americans, white Americans, Euro Americans, if you will, I think all of us, no matter which side of the issue we're on, not forgetting, but learning to forgive and learning to bring us back together as a country with the same objectives. Honoring the dead. You can't ask a family to hate the members of their family lost to war, whichever side they fought on. That's not reasonable. Honor the dead. Don't honor the cause. Forgive on both sides. Move forward, and let us get into a post-Civil War period. Let's get into a post-Emmanuel AME Church period where there has been more forgiveness and less instilled and perpetual resentment. Okay, now I've got enough calls that I can shut up and listen. Greg, can you put him on for me? Okay, I'm going to do a quick station ID, so we're going to buy a little time. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on KPFT 90.1 FM in Houston. Egberto Willis is my engineer. And now we can get Greg.
How
Greg,
you doing,
you're
Mike?
On the air. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. I agree with you. We need to have a post-war Emmanuel AME moment for all time now. Well, I hope this does for all of us as Americans, whether we're Northerners, Southerners, Texans, whatever state we're in, that we take to heart the words of the president on Friday. And one of the things that has got to change with all of us is we've got to be better at trying to talk about these issues honestly and frankly, even when it's uncomfortable. We're going to have to deal with it.
But without a sense of hate and without a sense of resentment And we're all going to have to find some level of acceptance and forgiveness
for that's
these,
right.
for these people that feel really, really different from us.
That's right. And that's where it's got to start. We got to start coming at this without rancor or hatred or just this idea, well, I don't quite grasp what you're saying. But I would hope, because if you haven't heard, PBS is re-airing Ken Burns' epic Civil War documentary. And when that comes on Channel 8, I hope all of us can sit down and watch it now with some more reflection and some more compassion and realize that that is a part of our history. There are things about this country that are going to be uncomfortable, and we may not always like what we hear, but at least when we air it, both sides may come away understanding each other a little bit better.
You know,
that's got to be the growth.
Both General Lee and General Grant, as far as I know, did not personally advocate abuse of civilians, did not personally advocate abuse of prisoners of war. But there was abuse of civilians on both sides, and there was abuse of prisoners of war on both sides. You can argue that the Confederates had a worse record taking care of their POWs, but that's because they had fewer resources for their whole army. You can argue that that's the case. They, you know, why should we be feeding the POWs better than we feed our own soldiers? So there's that. But do you see my point about we're at a possible inflection point if we use it properly? Do you agree with that? Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. I think why I say I agree with you that we're at this point is now, for all the people who thought racism went away, or just because we had the laws on the books, whether it was the Voting Rights Act, the Civil Rights Act, or Housing Act, that this solved our problem. It didn't, because for so long, both sides didn't want to honestly talk about race.
You can pass laws about how people act, but you can't do anything about how they feel.
That's right. You can't fix how they feel. And I was listening to the program, The Attitude, this morning that you guys have on. And they had a lady on who had worked in New Hampshire for Jimmy Carter. And one of the things that Arnie Arneson said, and we almost forget about this, that when Jimmy Carter was running for president, and after he became president, he wanted to have an honest, open discussion about race and many of the issues we're confronting in 2015, 2016. And just as we did then, we don't want to talk about it because it's uncomfortable or it would be bothersome. Well, if we don't talk about it after something as horrific as this, when a young man, barely 21 years old, walks into a church, goes to a worship service and Bible study, sits for an hour, sits with the very people that just as the service ends, he decides that he wants to kill because they don't look like him.
That he feels it's his white duty to kill them.
His white duty. If that were anybody else in any other group, we would be outraged just as we are right now. That should tell us something about some of the thinking of some Americans, not all, but some. And the one thing we have to come away with this is we have got to build bridges in this country and not be afraid to say things that are hurtful, uncomfortable, and that have to be addressed. Because for too long we've played games, and this is not the time to play games anymore.
We have to end our post-Civil War recovery period. It didn't end at the end of Reconstruction.
It did.
I think Egberto wants to make a comment.
Yeah.
Sure.
My big concern is that we keep looking at this from the Civil War premise. And I noticed earlier, Mike, you spoke about those people who, that, you know, there are a lot of atrocities that were done, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mike, own contention is that all of that is true, but I don't think what we're looking at today has anything to do with the Civil War. I think it has everything to do with racism, and that's why one of the pieces that I wrote said the Confederate flag issue was nothing but a decoy. And then I said, let's not just sit down here and make this a North-South issue. It's really an American issue. In other words, I think this whole argument that we're seeing that came out of South Carolina, I think it's a ruse, because I really think We do have a racial problem in as much as racial is nothing but a social construct. I was just reading an article today on genes, et cetera, et cetera. But I think the basic problem here is that we're really not discussing what the real problem is, and it has very little to do with the Civil War.
And here we have a rare example of Egberto being much more cynical than me.
Yeah. So, I think that's part of this, because as Lyndon Johnson said in the Voting Rights Act speech, there is no northern problem. There is no southern problem. It's an American problem.
I had not heard that.
And Americans have to understand that until we get to the point that we talk about these issues honestly, whether it's income inequality, whether it's the quality of the education we give our children, whether it's inequities in our education and social system, because we judge people by the color of their skin, not the content of their character, then we're never going to get anywhere.
We need to stop looking at each other as geographical adversaries, and whatever our political disagreements, we have to see them in the context of one nation. I'm going to let you go, Greg. I thank you very much. I think you said a lot of great things.
Thank you very much. It was my pleasure to be on the show.
All right. You take care.
Thank you.
Okay, real quick, listening to KPFT 90.1 FM. This is Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my compadre Egberto Willis. And we do have some open lines, 713-526-5738, and I do try to get everybody on the air who actually calls in. John, you are next. You're on the air. How are you doing tonight?
I'm okay. How are you doing?
I guess that depends on how the rest of my calls go. How is your call going to go?
Well, I think, who's the guy you got on your studio? The one who just said Eduardo?
Egberto.
He's absolutely right. We are trying to frame an issue as North versus South, which is absolutely not true. Let's go back to the to what happened to the Jews in Europe. When you look into the Jews' situation and what happened to them because of they were trying to be basically being taken out of the Europe, they had closure. They actually did something to the Jews and gave them some land and called it Israel. They created some portion of place that they could call their home. They had closure.
Yeah, well, seeing how well that's working out in terms of acceptance in the region, so I'm not sure that you can really...
Still, look, we could go on and on, but they had closure. You brought basically white, mostly white people who call African-Americans lazy, brought in tons of slaves, killed millions of people. And now we're turning around and saying, oh, forget about all that.
No.
It did not happen.
No.
The history of African-Americans and the Indians and all the real genocide that happened in the early days of the United States has been erased from our history and is not being taught in schools.
That's true.
But now we're trying to talk about Confederacy?
Okay, now wait a second. What I said early on, and maybe you weren't listening to the show when I did, or maybe you were, what I said early on, I do not believe in forgive and forget. I think forgetting is for suckers. Okay? I do believe there comes a point where, for yourself, if nothing else, as exemplified by the family members of the AME Church, for yourself, at some point, without forgetting, you need to forgive, especially when most of the people who perpetrated those crimes are long dead. And you should not visit the sins of the fathers on the sons. There are sons who are still committing sins, and those people we need to deal with. But we should not blame the sons for the sins of the fathers. And we are now six generations away, two lifetimes away from that war. We still have.
I do agree with you, but here's the problem.
Okay.
These families have forgiven, but don't for one minute think that there is no anger brewing almost to the point of revenge.
Yes.
Don't ever think. The guy who's living with revenge, to me, is worse than the guy who's saying he's forgiven.
But not everybody is looking for revenge. Some people are looking for conciliation.
You cannot reconcile with people who basically don't want you in the country.
No, And there are white supremacists who want that. And I'm not talking about them. I'm talking about people who are brought up believing that the Confederacy was an honorable cause, that it was about states' rights and tariffs, and the slavery thing was just kind of a secondary, tertiary thing. People have to accept that the Confederacy, in their own words, numerous times from numerous officials, was about right. perpetuating and spreading the institution of slavery.
Right.
But those people are dead. That country is dead. And we as a nation have to stop continuing to hate as if that war is still going on. We
That's
have to
absolutely
try.
Absolutely true.
We have to try.
I don't know if you watched the CNN on Sunday. What's his name? Zachariah somebody?
Zachariah.
Yeah, he has a show on Sunday, and he talked about Singapore. And he said Singapore is a very good example of how the United States needs to integrate everybody. Right now, we have a situation where we have immigrants coming into the country. But the more the immigrants are coming into the country, the more I'm starting to see everybody sitting in their corners. I'm Irish-American, I'm Mexican-American, I'm African-American. Everybody is saying
You're
I'm
American.
American. Nobody is trying to say I'm an American.
Well, this goes back to the question of why is Barack Obama our first black president instead of our first mixed-race president? I mean, by calling him our first black president, now we're starting to talk about, well, are we going back to the one-drop principle, where if you have one drop of black blood, you're considered black?
That's the fact. That's what it's always been.
Yes, in many places in the South and in many people's minds. I resent the fact that they keep calling him the America's first black president, and I'm a little annoyed that he has never corrected anybody.
Right, and more often than not, we accept the constitutionality of the Supreme Court. Well, we need to have two white guys, two black guys, two Asian Americans, two Mexicans. We need to have a country that reflects the 2016.
What we need, I'm going to let Barrow say something in a moment because he's eager. I just want to say that what we really need is more polyglot judges, judges with a more polyglot ethnic background.
Right. And even the presidency, they need to say you can't have all white presidents up to 2000 and what, all the way until Barack Obama. It can't be this. This is not reality. This is not reflecting what the U.S. is.
Okay, John, I'm going to have to let you go because I'm starting to run short of time and I've still got at least four callers to get in.
All right, thank you.
Oh, Egberto, you wanted to make your comment.
Yeah, I just wanted to be real quick, not to take too much of your time, Mike. And that is, President Obama would never correct being called a black president because there are no, I cannot tell you of any pure black person in this country.
So, oh, that's true.
And by saying that also, his experience as somebody with melanin is that of any other black person.
Which of course, part of the problem.
Right.
Is that the one drop principle is always being applied.
That is correct. But the other thing is to remember, what I always try to tell people, race is a social construct. And we have to break that first, and then he can be the president.
Well, okay. I'm looking at something a little less esoteric and a little bit more humanly fundamental. Dana, I appreciate your waiting. You're on the air. How you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
Yeah, I was just, I think your general comment is on forgive and forget. And I think every nation that goes through a war, if you raise a certain flag and the other army wins, you take that flag down. And, for us to allow states like South Carolina to put that flag on their state ground, shame on the American government. We should have taken it over and taken it down.
Well, that's what the war was fought over. That's what Reconstruction was about. Those flags didn't
start.
What
I'm saying to you is Americans should never forgive and forget.
No, but they should forgive.
You either won or you lost. The Confederacy frickin' lost. Take your flag down. End of discussion.
Okay, Dana, you're probably one of the people that I'm speaking to. I don't disagree with you. As an expatriate northerner, someone who grew up in New York, lived in Brooklyn until I was 26 years old, came down here in 1977, I grew up being educated as a Yankee, as a Union guy, okay, in many senses of that term. But I've also lived long enough to understand that, and I'm going to reiterate, I do not believe in forgive and forget. I believe in forgive. I believe in forgive. And I believe that if Southerners who have ancestry going back to the Civil War can simply grasp the fact that the war from their country's point of view is about slavery, and that they don't have to dishonor their ancestors, and that they can remember that the Union soldiers treated them poorly, just as Northerners remember that to the extent the Confederacy invaded, they weren't treated particularly well either. We all need to forgive on some level to move forward. Forgetting is not part of what I'm asking. Forgiving and embracing realities of fact is all I'm talking about.
Yeah, and the reality of the matter is the Confederacy lost the war. They should take their flag down. There's no need to have a battle flag up in a state capitol where people, do you think, you know, just because I'm a sixth generation Texan, I'm going to go put a come and take it flag in my front yard or go put it up in the state capitol and dare the American government not to come take it down?
But on one level, it is a free speech issue.
You have to be a stupid ass.
Well, I don't know that that's a... Anyway, you used the word that we're like debating. Oh, should we hit the blank button on that? No, I think you're okay. But be careful. I think that raising that flag is a free speech issue. I don't like it.
Oh, I totally disagree with you there.
Well, I don't like it. Hold on. I don't like it, but I think it's a free speech issue. I think that until people can forgive in their hearts, you're going to have a hard time keeping that flag from flying. And that's where I'm basically trying to go.
I just disagree with you on that.
Well, that's okay. I'm gonna let you go. I got a couple more folks I want to get on before the end, but I thank you so much for calling. I appreciate your point of view. Dane is one of those people, and he's a Northern sympathizer. We've got Southern sympathizers who feel the same way. We're talking about the people that have to find it in their hearts to accept the past while still forgiving in the present. Okay, Gary, you're on. How you doing?
Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
Fascinating as usual. I'm calling to vouch for Egberto, support what he said. He's absolutely right, I think.
About it being a social construct?
Well, I think you're missing the forest for the trees here. The issue is not the Civil War. The Civil War was a symptom of a long-standing disease called prejudice, because why did the slavers take Africans in the first place instead of French people or German people? And they brought them here because they were already prejudiced. Now, the people today that are racist and burning churches and murdering people, they're not doing it because of the Civil War. Most of them probably failed history. They're doing it because of this innate prejudice. Now, the man mentioned the Jews and that we gave them Israel as to compensate because of the Nazi atrocities.
Well, we kind of, sort of. The British, hold on. The British kind of, sort of gave them Israel, Jews kind of, sort of took it.
Excuse me. What I'm saying is that the Jews were slaves in Egypt 4,000 years ago, which is why they went to Israel, which was their original land of origin, which is why they gave them Israel instead of Turkey or Syria. And that goes all the
Kenya.
Way back.
So
atrocities.
Gary.
You're missing
at one
the point,
point
my
I
point.
Am not missing the point, and you have to let me occasionally respond.
Well, let me just finish.
No, hold
point.
On. At one point, the British offered them Kenya, which was a British colony. And the Zionists said, no, we have no historical connection to Kenya. There's no way we can even rationalize why we are there. And essentially, they would have been white supremacists there. So that would have been the end of that.
But the issue is that the Jews were oppressed by the Nazis, and the Jews were oppressed by
the Jews have been oppressed by everybody for 2,000 years.
It
the
has
Nazis
nothing
were
to
just
do
the
with
worst
World
of the
War
bunch.
II or the Civil War. It has to do with human nature. Dare I say DNA again?
No, because what I am talking
the
about
way
is
people are.
We have, you know what, if we're going to accept the way people are, then what you're saying is that civilization is just a thin veneer over human bestiality, and there's no point in even trying. I'm more of an optimist in that regard. I think that most people want to do the right thing. I think that doing right is its own reward. I don't need to be a religious person to try to do good. I believe that doing good is its own reward.
Absolutely.
And I believe...
And we're getting there.
Well, we're getting there unless you want to go back to the DNA issue.
Well, tell me about Mr. Roof, okay?
All right. I'll tell you what I'm going to tell you about, and then I'm going to let you go because I got two other callers I want to get in.
All right.
I want to talk. People have brought up Israel. Let me tell you how hard it is to deal with prejudice, okay? You've got the Jews and the Palestinians. You know that the Palestinians in their own language are Philistines, right?
Correct.
Okay, Philistina is the word they have for themselves. They are ancestrally the Philistines. So you've got that conflict, which is essentially 3,000 years old at a minimum. Then you've got in the Jewish community in Israel, you've got the Ashkenazic Jews and the Sephardic Jews, and they don't entirely get along with each other. And then you've got the Ethiopian Jews, and everybody looks down on them. And you've got the Hasidic Jews and the Reconstructionist Jews. I mean, it's hard to imagine such a fractious people as the Jews, given how few of them there are. You would think there aren't enough people to have this many disagreements and denominations, and yet. Okay. I'm going to have to
Can
let
I,
you go.
I have to say one last thing.
One last quick thing.
All right. It's the just like the American people and the Democrats and the Retalibans.
That's not a bad. I may steal that. We'll see.
It's yours. Take
I don't
it,
like
baby.
To be that inflammatory, but I may steal it.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, Bruce, I believe you are up next. I appreciate your waiting. We're going to have to make this a little short because I'm going to have two other callers I'm going to try to get on. Doyle is going to be after you, and then... Oops, did we lose you? Egberto cut you off. Call back. We'll get you on. Doyle. Can I get Doyle? Egberto is looking panicky. He's looking left. He's looking right. Doyle.
There I am.
There you are. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. Thank you. I just wanted to say I don't really care about flags. It's like guns, you know, flags don't kill people. People do, you know? So I just kind of think that, you know, if you really think about the history of the United States and Civil War, you know, the U.S. flag has been used to do some really atrocious things as well.
We're not really white as a country.
You know, and there's actually there was a Ku Klux Klan march in Washington. There's a lot of pictures of it online.
1940s?
All the Klan members are holding, you know, American flags.
I'm going to make a comment on that. Apparently, one of the things the Klan did to make that march more impressive was when the people in the front of the march got to the end, they raced around to get to the back so that they could march again to make that march look much bigger than it was. So that's just a little interesting historical bit of trivia.
Oh, yeah. Well, that makes sense. But the point is they were using the American flag,
yes.
You know, and no one's saying, well, we need to stop using the American flag because racists have used the American flag, you know?
Sure.
The other point I was going to make is that as far as losing a war is concerned, I mean, if that's the premise as to whether or not we should have flags illegal, you know, then, I mean, if someone that has that argument prepared to tell people not to fly Mexican flags in Texas, you know?
So you agree with me that flying any flag is essentially a free speech issue?
Yeah, why not?
And it's got to be in their hearts to not fly it in the case of a Confederate flag, unless it's for a historical reason. I'll tell you really quick. There was actually something that I saw that I think went over the top in this banning of the Confederate flag. Apparently, there was a war game, North and South, 1863. Mm-hmm. And apparently, it's been taken off the market. On MSN. They've taken it off the market because it shows a Confederate and a Union flag. Now, to me, that's insane. That's a denial of historical reality. So
yeah.
It's not the Confederate flag that's the problem. It's the intent with which it is flown. And that requires a change, literally, of people's hearts and thoughts.
But, Mike, it's not a free speech issue with regards to flying it on the capital of a state.
It is a free speech issue unless you elect people who don't want to fly it.
Well, I think in that case, though, Egberto's right, except for that it is also a state's right issue. So I don't think the federal government can tell a state what its flag should or shouldn't be.
I think they can try, but it won't end well.
Yeah, but I mean, even just constitutionally, that shouldn't be the case, you know? And so, but, you know, I don't necessarily think very highly of a state that would use a rebel flag as their state flag, or put it up, you know, just for show. I think that that's actually speaks pretty poorly of that state. If it's actually a member of the union, you know. But I also kind of also like the willingness to rebel against the federal government in certain instances, you know. I think that if we didn't have the willingness to do that, then we might find ourselves in some bad situations.
But, you know, the Constitution does actually provide for a change of our form of government. It doesn't require an armed rebellion. You just have to persuade enough people to agree with you.
Well, that's what I mean. I am not really one of those that would want to see another war or anything. I'm more of a nonviolent person.
I know you well enough to know that. So,
yeah,
I'm going to have to
think
that's
true with all of these issues. You know, I mean, if you think it should be illegal, then let people vote on it. You know, I mean, this is a democracy. You know, and so
your elected officials put it up, and your elected officials can take it down. It's really just that simple.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Okay,
I'd like somebody different next time.
Yep, that's the way. Thanks for calling, Doyle. It's always good to hear from you. Okay, we've got Brad on, and I've got one last caller after Brad that I'm going to try to get on. Brad, how you doing?
Oh, doing well. Well, you know, we need to have a compromise, okay?
Always.
Let's have the Confederate flag fly over because it's our heritage, but so is the Mexican flag. That's our heritage. The French flag, that's our heritage. And the sixth and final flag would be the Spanish flag. Let them all fly over our state capital.
Hence, six flags over Texas.
Yeah. Okay. And I don't think we've then figured out, let's just keep the Texas flag and the American flag and forget the other ones, okay?
I would like to think, and I think it takes a largeness of spirit to agree with this, everybody who died in the Civil War was an American. If you want to honor your Confederate war dead, honor them with an American flag, because they were all Americans.
Yeah, but, you know, also, I don't think race is a big problem, because if there ever is a KKK rally, the protesters outnumbering them 20-30 to 1, okay? That's not the problem. It's the problem of parents buying guns for their drug-dealing, lazy, unemployed children. That's the problem.
It's one of the problems, yeah.
Okay? And if Umberto's so against the flag, and if that's what supposedly contributed to him killing people, what about the Gold's Gym shirt that he was wearing? Should we outlaw health clubs now?
You know, I think maybe one way of framing it would be people yell when they're angry.
Right.
If you were to outlaw yelling, it wouldn't make them less angry.
And the final thing, so you can get the other person on the radio, if the flag is so horrible, how many people, when they were watching the Dukes of Hazzard, decided to kill, you know, black people when the General Lee was basically the Bo and Duke, Luke were going away, trying to drive away from Roscoe P. Coltrane, okay?
It's important to remember why the Confederate flag has gained popularity at different times since the Civil War for different reasons.
I think he's quoting me incorrectly. I actually said that the flag wasn't really the real issue. So I think you're missing the point with me, my dear friend.
Okay, I'm going to let you go, Brad, because I have one more call I want to take.
Bye-bye.
I got about 3 minutes. Thanks so much for calling. Bruce, you're the last one. How you doing? You're on the air.
Thanks for taking my call. One thing, I didn't hear all of your discussion. I don't know if anyone mentioned, but scholars have recently started saying that the reason Texas declared independence from Mexico was because they were afraid Mexico was about to outlaw slavery.
That, I believe, is one of the reasons I have heard as well. That and the fact that Mexico required everyone to convert to Catholicism, which for some people didn't sit well.
But, I mean, yeah, that had been around a while, but, well, you know, who knows? I'm just threw that out there. One thing on Obama being black or half white, Wanda Sykes did a real funny bit on that, where she said he's our first black president until he messes up, and then it's, hey, who elected that half white guy?
Okay, all right. You got anything else, Bruce, or am I going to let you go?
That's all.
Okay, thanks so much for calling. I appreciate everybody who called. I think we've had a good discussion. I think we've learned we have a ways to go. We have hearts to change. We have largeness of spirit that needs to be developed among many of us. Again, I'm not saying forgive and forget. I'm saying as a nation, we need to forgive and put the past sins of all our fathers and grandfathers behind us. and accept the fact that everybody who died in that war was American. Everybody who died in that war was American. Blacks, whites, Northerners, Southerners, civilians, military personnel. They were all American. That's why it was the most costly war in American history, with something like 600,000 dead in a population that I think was only about 25 million. It was a Holocaust. It was horrible. We need to get past it as a nation. There are always going to be racists, and there are always going to be white supremacists, and there are always going to be black people who will never forgive white people for the slavery that their grandfathers and great-grandfathers inflicted on them. My heart goes out to them, but we all need to try to move forward as a nation. We are the United States of America. We need to be the United States of America, regardless of our historical and philosophical disagreements. They have to remain what they are, historical and philosophical disagreements, and not a disagreement over whether we are one nation. Okay, that's the show. You've been listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig and my compatriot Egberto Willis on the engineering board. This is 90.1 FM Houston. And remember, one nation, whether you believe under God or not, one nation, the United States of America, North and South, East and West. Have a great week.
KPFT Community Advisory Board is requesting your participation in a listener survey. The KPFT Community Advisory Board, also known as the CAB, is a vehicle for effective community input to the station's governing body about station programming, community service, and impact on the community from the station's major policy decisions. Community Advisory Boards assist stations in developing programs and policies that address the specific needs of the communities they endeavor to serve. KPFT listeners are welcomed and encouraged to participate in the completion of this survey. Please visit the KPFT website at www.kpft.org and complete the Community Needs Survey. Thank you for your help, and thanks for listening to 90.1 FM KPFT Houston.
Why donate your car to KPFT? You can free up space in your garage, you can avoid the hassles of selling your car, there's no need to pay hefty car repair bills, and you turn that unwanted car into an IRS tax deduction. In addition, you're helping to make the Houston area better with unique arts, music, and culture. You help keep options on the airwaves. Best of all, making a car donation is easy and always free. Just call 1-855-573-8227 or visit kpft.org to donate your old vehicle to support KPFT. Again, that number is 1-855-KPFT-CAR. Thanks for your help. This is 90.1 KPFT Houston, kpft.org worldwide.